Siren FM.
And the moment has arrived where we say it's time for the weather for Lincoln from Gabriella Peralta in Gibraltar.
It's a lot colder today. It's highs of 10 degrees centigrade, lows of 4 degrees centigrade, a good deal of cloud all day with showers in the morning and afternoon.
Live from Gibraltar, with or without her faithful friend Frodo, it's time for Gabriella Peralta on the Midweek Drive Morning Edition.
Hurrah. Phil Leaner sends his best, but he'll be back with us next week when we continue the excitement that launched last week, of course, where Phil kind of does the bridging link from midnight in Los Angeles. And hopefully, timing it well, we'll be able to follow the sequence over as Hollywood and California proceeds from May the 3rd to Star Wars Day. Anyway, Gabriella, Frodo's current state of play. I mean, it's something that Ben worries and frets about on a regular weekly basis. But I know
I have sleepless nights for it.
As he comes in, he's, you know, offset by Brighton's sensational sort of return to the Premiership, or the top league, shall we say. They've never actually played in the Premiership before, but they have been in Division 1 34 years ago. In fact, we'll be celebrating what was happening 20 years ago at the Goldstone Ground as the programme proceeds. But what is the state of play with Frodo?
I don't know, he's abandoned me this morning, he's not in the same room as me, but I can only assume that means he's asleep.
Dangerous, of course. He could be out saving the world, Hannah.
Yeah. This is a critical well, based thing. On previous experience, maybe we should check radiators and sources of heat, since I seem to remember he likes
That's
sleeping
he
next to them.
Morning. Oh. Yeah. That's exactly what he did this morning. It's nice weather in Gibraltar. It's, well, we almost in May. We don't need the heater on. But Frodo begs for it every morning.
Aww.
When you
and
say,
obviously I do it. Yeah.
When you say he begs for, do you actually sort? I mean, because most dogs they actually beg for chocolate treats and such like. Is Frodo somebody who, in the pug world, actually he really fancies radiators?
He just loves all comforts of life. Oh. So pillows, blankets, radiators.
So not like yourself, Ben, in many ways.
Yes, a lot like me.
Exactly. In fact, have you ever seen Ben and Frodo in the same... No, I won't even go there.
No.
It could be,
it's
definitely.
But if you ever need a new radiator, just come to me.
Exactly. So anyway, the question, do cats prefer a night in to a night out? A recent survey commissioned by Vets for Pets has revealed that 56% of cats in the United Kingdom spend most, if not all, of their time indoors. Let's just set the scene here. Ben, do you have any cats in the Lewis household?
No, dogs. We're a dog family.
Right, right. And do they prefer being inside, presumably?
Well, yeah, yeah. I mean, he likes to walk, but he likes the comfort of the inside a lot.
Radiators?
No, beds. Oh. Beds and chairs.
I have often wondered with respect to Frodo how he actually sleeps on the radiator, but presumably he's got the art of balance sorted through. Yeah. Hannah?
I don't have any cats, but my best friend back home does. And obviously I've spent a lot of time around her house in growing up years. Yeah. So I'm kind of their surrogate mother some of the time.
And is the notion of putting the cat out, you know, this apparently it's all gone. The whole notion they prefer to actually be indoors.
Well, yes. From my experience, they seem to sleep a lot. But they do wander out when they want to go outside through the cat flap.
Well, 43% of cats, of course, apparently hate the cold, so they don't go outside at all.
I can relate to that.
These are the critical lines that we'll be pursuing as Life Changers. Anyway, Hannah, it's a chance for you to actually throw a few questions at Gabriella as you proceed to that wonderful bridging moment between the end of the second year and the start of the third year.
Oh, dear. Thinking of happier thoughts rather than preparing for third year, have you had a good Easter?
Yeah, it was good. I just went out, I guess. But,
and
yeah,
that is what intensive journalism courses actually provides for you. Over a collection between Hannah and Gabriella there of over 5 years of journalistic experience. And the incisive question is, have you had a good Easter?
Well, it's what I ask everyone when I see them again after Easter. I feel it's polite and...
It's obligatory.
Exactly. It's very, very good, Hannah.
And I like to find out what people did over Easter. I mean, you know, Easter egg hunts, playing with bunnies. It's interesting stuff.
I can see another chart coming up here, Hannah, in which you can have smiley faces and emoticons and emojis all cast through the whole system, though, which is very good. Anyway, life continues. Meanwhile, let's share with the world, because I'm not sure whether the judging has taken place for the Sci-Fi London Film Challenge that's actually here, but you were part of the first ever Midweek Drivette team to take part in the Film Challenge. You're the first one to actually return in the studio. I mean, I sent you a couple of good luck texts and so on. Never heard anything after that, Ben, other than it seems to be going well.
You got blanked.
Exactly.
We were so busy.
Exactly.
Sorry.
So from your own perspective, whilst I was up at Sci-Fi Scarborough and indeed the Countryside Links event at the Lincolnshire Showground, and you were busily working, this is Palm Sunday, so pre-Easter, obviously, was it all satisfying? Was it what? I mean, and actually, how can Gabriella in Gibraltar look at the film that the Midweek Drivettes have made?
Oh, well, yeah, if you want to see it, I believe it's been put on Holly's YouTube channel. It is called Takedown. I'm not sure whether just searching that will bring it up.
Probably not, actually. I've tried on the advice of Tessa Snott to just type in Takedown. I get all sorts of strange things there. You're going to have to send a link which we can publicise.
I will send you a link, Alex. Yeah, I will do that after my law seminar today.
Unusually, probably due to atmospherics, you may have gathered, if you're paying particular attention here, that there's a kind of echo on the line with Gabriella, which means that every time I'm sort of saying something like this, it's sort of coming through twice and bouncing back in like some sort of ionosphere.
We're in a tunnel.
It is. It's
this is the connection between...
It's like another grand episode of Doctor Who that's sort of emerged in its own way. Probably Frodo knows what's happening because he's on that frequency. However, would you like to put those last two questions, probably in stereo and with a time delay, to Gabriella Peralta, please, Hannah?
Have you enjoyed your telephonic link with us this morning?
Yes, I have, thank you. Was there a delay there?
I think we're okay with the responses. It's just we seem to be getting a... Or is it just me?
I think it's just you, Alex.
Right then. That sorts that out perfectly well. It's often been said that it's just myself, and clearly that's the matter of case there. So it adds all sorts of wonderful things there. As we head to... What's the next feature on the programme?
Do cats prefer a night out?
No. It's Richard Fitzwilliams.
Okay. He might have an opinion on it.
He might well have an opinion on
the film Cats, though, probably. I don't think it would be to do with this.
Well, you know. He will be talking about another classic movie called The Promise today. And indeed, another sort of aspect we'll be working through. Plus, he's recently returned from Paris. And he did specifically want to say he wanted to talk a little bit more about the delights of Parisian life and aspects and so on and so forth. Now, final question, please, Hannah.
Will you be joining us again soon?
Yes, next week, right?
Star Wars Day. 2017. Oh, the excitement.
Just woke up from a fuzzy dream.
may seem as though it's so far away, but really, Lincoln to London, England, is not that far away, is it, Richard Fitzwilliams?
Well, not really. That's absolutely true. And how far away is Paris from London?
Exactly. It's just, you know, it's looping away from Lincoln, London, Paris, all connected together. Before we go into Rodin, let's talk about centenaries. We have to ask the question, because she's returned, Hannah Brown, fresh from the 48-hour film challenge in which you were making a short movie yourself, yay, together with, of course, Holly and the rest of the Midweek Drivettes, or, well, I say the rest, some of them, shall we say. Have you been paying attention and actually keeping up to date with your chart as far as where Richard Fitzwilliams has been positioning his movies, with happy smiley faces, not so happy smiley faces, and so on?
I haven't while I've been away, but I will head to the podcast to catch up.
It's way forward.
Yes.
And let's reverse our things. Rather than going into movies, because we're actually going to play a trailer for Richard in a few moments for one of the movies, which he may be able to identify from the basis of the trailer alone. Let's, before we go down that line, Richard, let's talk about your trip to Paris and the centenary of the thinker. Or is it Rodin?
It is, in fact, Rodin. I have to say, I'm in Paris at the moment. It's the cornucopia of art. I mean, as always, it's absolutely wonderful to go there. You can tramp down those fantastic boulevards. And Rodin is very much the centre of events, because what they've done is they have refurbished the Rodin Museum, and that is absolutely glorious. It's not only got one of the most wonderful, if not the most wonderful, apart from the Tuileries, garden in Paris itself that I know. The facts are, you can see there the work, famous work, sculpture of Honoré Balzac. You can see the gates of hell, which he spent decades over, and in the museum, from the kiss to those famous hands and innumerable sculptures, and also those whom he influenced. And this is another theme, because it's very, very interesting with Rodin. As you know, there's always been such a controversy between contemporary art and the figurative, and Rodin was the, as it were, the bridge between the two, uneasily, I would have to say, because I wasn't aware until I went to the Grand Palais exhibition. This is magnificent. This is really the influence of Rodin. I wasn't aware that there had been quite a time when Rodin was out of fashion, after roughly Between the Wars. And then they found his plaster casts, and the contemporary artists saw there an inspiration for themselves. And subsequently, he's been positively canonized, but here is a genius, and it's absolutely wonderful to see both the Rodin Museum and also the Grand Palais exhibition as proof of this. I mean, really, really talented, but not only that, it's interesting in the Grand Palais, because you could see those who were influenced by him and how, and this was really fascinating.
Richard, I'm going to inject a touch of controversy to the proceedings now, because one of the three folk within the studio in Lincoln at this moment in time revealed to me last week that, well, once you've actually seen the Arc de Triomphe and the Eiffel Tower, there's nothing much happening in Paris. No, Anna, could that have been yourself?
No, I've never been to Paris, so I can't comment on Paris.
I think you should name and shame them.
Ben, could it have been your good self?
Yeah.
Yes.
What were you doing? Were you
well, no, it wasn't. I didn't. Alex quoted me wrong, though. I didn't mean just them two. There's about five things. And then
Alex never misquotes.
He does. He does. Know, as proof just there.
I'm shocked. No. I mean,
there's about five things, Richard. And then I think you start to lose a bit of interest then. It depends on what you like. That's the thing. If you don't like a lot of stuff, I think it's everything's crowded as well. It's all a bit of a.
Well, yes, but the thing is, I suspect you went to the Louvre, which am I right? Am I not?
That as well. Yes.
Yes, I know. This year you've got a real problem, and I agree with you. There is a difficulty, a real. I don't know what you do about it, because as everybody knows, with the pyramid and the new entrance, I was in the Louvre quite a lot, and the thousands, I would almost say tens of thousands, it is, I think I'm right, the most visited such site on the most extraordinary masses of people on probably on the planet. Anyway, I agree there. You can try and see the Mona Lisa. I mean, you might as well be at some sort of...
Well, I'll Google it on Google. Gathering, you know, might search it on Google if you want to have a look at it.
I don't think that is a substitute. and I wouldn't agree with you there.
Richard. He's standing about 40 metres away from the painting.
You might want to steal it, Ben. You just have to hold it.
And you only get to look at it for about a few minutes before someone hushes you on, and the next group have to come in.
Yes, but then what you can do is go to some of the rest of it. You could see some of the Dutch works. There's a Vermeer exhibition. Now, that meant queuing, and I duly queued for, about half an hour for the first queue, and then to my own astonishment, there was a second inside waiting for me, but survived 40 minutes, and then you go and see some amazing Vermeers. I'd never seen Vermeer's lace maker before. It's absolutely exquisite, and also the milkmaid from the Rijksmuseum in Amsterdam, and there I would commend this is a completely different experience because the Rijk Museum, I mean, it's cool, it's not too crowded, they've only recently redone it, and also they haven't got quite the masses that you find in the Louvre, but, you know, there's the Musée Jacquemart André, which is the Boulevard Haussmann. I mean, that's magnificent because not only has it got Rembrandts and Reynolds and Bouchers and the like, and its permanent collection, and a restaurant, an Art Deco restaurant, which attracts queues, but also you've always got a new exhibition of some sort. There's a Museum of the Luxembourg Gardens, which had
he's turning all barrels on you, Ben. Sorry.
I know. I mean, I absolutely love the architecture of Paris. Don't get me wrong. I absolutely love the way it is, the culture and the people there too. But
the Musée Rodin, we can see.
I think you need a select taste to enjoy a lot of the stuff they offer there.
If you love it, as you say, what would you wish them to offer that they don't?
I think it's more... I think it needs to be more accessible for all ages. I think that's what I'm trying to come to. I think a lot of it's down to... when I mean select taste, I mean people who enjoy fine art and enjoy...
How about fashion or film?
Fashion, yeah, of course.
Streets.
I know, but this is what I'm saying. Not everyone is interested in those particular things, and I feel like there needs to be more of a broader spectrum of things for people to be interested in to enjoy it.
Music, for example, too. I mean, I don't know what's in Paris that can't satisfy you. You've positively sated with
the Louvre for one.
It's. I think we'll have to draw a line under that. I mean, I'll just look at the Kiss on the Move, because the Kiss has been moved for Rodin, the Centennial exhibition at the Grand Palais. But of course, the terracotta version of the Kiss is still actually on display. And the Museum Rodin is obviously the go-to place for the superlative centenary of Rodin that we've just been talking about and hearing from Richard Fitzwilliams. And obviously Ben has sort of been duly sort of righted when it comes to our Parisian cousins there. It had to be done, Brent. It's just one of those sort of things. Right, I think we'll try the trailer now, and let's see if Richard's able to identify from the movie he's going to review, it's one of the two, which one we're going to actually catch for Richard Fitzwilliams' movie reviews this morning.
Be careful.
Thank you.
Shoot him!
I think that's more than sufficient, really, in terms of where we're coming from. What do you think, Hannah?
I have no idea.
No idea what's up, Ben?
No.
No?
No.
Richard, have you identified the movies yet?
Well, I would say that it's part of the promise, since that sound could be in either. It is, of course, a slightly dodgy one. It's a difficult one, but I'd say...
Let's give you a couple more seconds, then.
She's a fine woman, Mika.
You make me feel I've come home.
She's very fond of you. It's obvious.
You make me feel promise, I've come home. She's very fond of you, I promise. Marvellous. Let's go then with another Christian Bale non-mumbling exercise in dramatic art form.
It's certainly non-mumbling here, but I have to say with the promise, I thought that this might be a very stilted film, and also, of course, it dips into a... Well, this is one of the hidden horrors of history, because the massacre of the Armenians by the Turks a century ago, I mean, this is a largely forgotten genocide, and Turkey denies it ever occurred. The director, Terry George, scripted In the Name of the Father and Hotel Rwanda, and it tells the story of an Armenian medical student, Mikhail. He's betrothed in his own village already, but he goes to study at Constantinople at the Imperial Medical Academy. He befriends Emre, who's the son of a top Turkish official, and he meets the absolutely gorgeous Anna. She's Charlotte Le Bon, who is, quite an eyeful, I have to say, but attached to an American reporter for Associated Press. Chris Myers, played by, as you say, Christian Bale. Well, we find out that Mikhail is able to avoid conscription, but when he tries to save his uncle, he's sent to a labor camp. He escapes, returns to his village, marries, and when his wife gets pregnant, they return to the village, and subsequently, there is this terrible, terrible massacre by the Turks, and Chris is taken to Constantinople and charged with spying. They intend to execute him, and then the American ambassador is able to save him. But what about the orphans and the refugees desperate to escape, trying to fight off the Turks and hoping for help? Will it come? And what of the message of this film, which is, quite frankly, pretty horrendous? I have to say, I was very, very impressed by a movie about a subject that I'm ashamed to say I knew very, very little. And this is a movie that's attracted hits, as it were, constantly online. There are Armenians who are supporting it, and there are those who obviously believe it didn't happen, or would prefer to believe this, that are denigrating it. But in fact, looked at as a film, it's been a calamity financially. It cost $100 million, and it's only made $5 million. It's already opened in the States. But it's powerful, I thought. The period sense, very good. Very, very lavish. The money shows on the screen, whether it's a labor camp or whether it's the harbor at Constantinople. And I have to say, I was very impressed with it. And I thought that the performances were, yes, there are cliched aspects of it. And yes, Mikhail, played by Oscar Isaac, what he gets up to, and he follows, so to speak, a hero. The epics tend to have this sort of character. Christian Bale, I thought, was very good. I couldn't take my eyes off Charlotte Le Bon, but it is a genuinely chilling experience seeing this movie.
Do you think President Erdogan will actually be watching The Promise and saying, that's what it's all about then? Or is that just another Turkish delight?
Well, you mentioned this the evening, I think yesterday evening, I heard that they've imprisoned another 9,000 in Turkey, and already 40,000 imprisoned, 100,000.
They'll have to build some more cells.
There actually are policemen being arrested. The 9,000 were from the police, according to the BBC. I mean, this is a movie that during the period the Ottoman Empire was declining. It's really horrendous. It's very powerful, I have to say, and it's sobering viewing for anybody.
Well, if you will be a medical student who falls in love with a fellow American after travelling to Constantinople with an American photojournalist, clearly that's the message that will come through at the height of the Great War, 100 years or so from where we are now.
An Armenian student, you did say, not an American student?
You're quite right, an Armenian student. Well done. Well spotted, Richard. Deliberate mistake thrown in there from the point of view of rewriting Hollywood history. Hannah?
Yes, some reviewers have been said that this is a sort of Hollywood movie, but it packs a hell of a punch if you go and see it.
Will it appeal to your good self, Hannah Brown?
Yes. It's odd. It looks amazing. I really do want to go see this film, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Ben?
I think it's really interesting. It's something from a perspective that isn't seen very often either in the film world. So I think it's one that would definitely take a shine to many people.
And it's got Oscar Isaac in, and he's won an Academy Award, so all's good with the world. And presumably Simon's very happy with his daughter Charlotte, as in Simon Le Bon, more of which later.
Is that is it Duran Duran?
That would be the very same. Mm. We could obviously confirm that, but I feel that they're pretty much connected from that point of view. Mm. Moving on, Richard, let's peer through the shadows and illuminate a bit more.
Well, I've chosen a movie that may sound rather obscure. It's a Korean action thriller, but I say that this is going to be an extraordinary experience because it's got got 100% on for the critics on Rotten Tomatoes. That is so rare, and I can see why, having seen it. The second Korean film, of course, we've been talking about in just a fortnight, which are absolutely unique because The Handmaiden is absolutely
It's brilliant. Not just the good work of Kim Jong-un in the north of the country, obviously.
Well, that I don't think he would necessarily appreciate this movie because he is not somebody, I suspect, who spends much time in the cinema and seeing...
He's got too many rockets to launch, let's face it, so we understand that.
Certainly, it must have been extraordinary, the attack after the American film, which maligned him. The theme of it was that the Korean people, the North Koreans, believed that he was a god because he didn't defecate. That you could have to say that... It wasn't enviable for whichever North Korean censor saw that and launched an attack on Sony, a very serious one.
Absolutely.
But this is directed by Kim Ji-woon. It's set during the Japanese occupation of Korea, which was in the first half of the last century. Here we meet Korean police captain, played by Lee Jung-choo, played by Song Kang-ho. And this is he's a fascinatingly complex character because... His Japanese masters are using him to discover what resistance there is in Seoul to their rule. And he's also got a brutal Japanese shadow, played by Hashimoto extremely well, a real villain. And we have a balletic sequence, remember Crouching Tiger, Hidden Dragon, that sort of, or that type of scene, the beginning, where a resistance fighter is being pursued and... Dozens of Japanese troops close in on him. A very, very spectacular opening. Then we have the fact the leader of the resistance, Che San, played by Lee Byung-hun, tries to get this character to become a turncoat. He's already done it once. He could do it again because they want to get explosives from Shanghai to Seoul. So will he help? What is his price? And why is this an unusual movie? Well, it's on especially first half of this film. I mean, a lot of it is in shadows, far too much, frankly. Lots of people plotting in darkened rooms and the like. We've seen it before. Then we go from Shanghai to Seoul. It's an extraordinary train journey, and it is so tense. It is so superbly filmed. Will the Japanese track the resistance fighters on this train? The train was a sort of miniature version, or parts of it, of sort of Orient Express type in the more luxurious compartments. And also, of course, it's got all the ordinary class. And how this is handled in the cutting, I found absolutely nail-biting. The film very, very skillfully builds towards, I can only call it a spectacular denouement. And if you have trouble with the first hour, and this is 2 hours, 20 minutes, the rest of it makes up for it. I was absolutely gripped by it. The performances are all excellent. And I can only say that the critics have liked it for good reason.
It's got infiltration and deception. Wonderful. Ben, does it appeal?
Yeah, I think it does. I think it's quite like drama based, and I think that it reminds me of some sort of period drama. But no, it does look really nice, and I think I really enjoy watching it.
Lots of subtitles, of course, very important.
I'm afraid subtitles put some people off, but when you're on that train, you're not going to bother whether there's dialogue in subtitles or dialogue that is more conventional. Yeah. You will be gripped by it, and subsequently, of course, you're never quite sure which side this Korean police captain's actually on, because of course he's got to preserve his position for the Japanese masters to believe he's with them. We know he's giving some aid to the resistance, but they're not sure how much and exactly how it will work out.
Which way will Hashimoto go? That's the
Absolutely,
question.
Yes. It's very, very... he, in fact, goes one way. He's very suspicious, and Hashimoto is, of course, the actor who plays the Japanese shadow, because the Japanese, rather wisely, as it turns out, don't trust the police captain Lee. So Hashimoto's got to be, dealt with, shall we say.
Well, it does happen. Hannah, have you managed to actually effectively score Richard's views for The Age of Shadows and The Promise?
Well, two smiley faces down.
Two smiley faces.
Yes, I'd given both 4 stars, and I'm surprised about The Promise, because a lot of reviewers haven't liked it, but It touched me. I was
well,
is it because they didn't understand it, Richard?
I'm sorry?
Is it because they probably didn't understand it?
Well, it's the sort of movie that some period films are very stilted and sometimes unconvincing. I haven't actually read, one of the things I try not to do before giving my reviews is read detailed reviews by others, but I've just seen the ratings, which imply a huge box office collapse, but that's unfortunate. There's still time because it only opened relatively recently.
Richard, don't worry, because only a matter of hours now before Guardians of the Galaxy 2 rescues the universe. So Rocket Raccoon is on the case.
There's no question that I should be on Turkish television a bit later today without them hearing, probably. They may be tuned in to what I've been saying. Mm. I mean, this,
we find some of our best listeners come from Turkish television, personally.
Mm. Well, yes, and I've been discussing the star system and also do movies such as Guardians of the Galaxy and various others, Scarlett Johansson's most recent, Ghost in the Shell. Are they reliant on star power, or indeed do we have, for example, The Hunger Games making Jennifer Lawrence, Harry Potter making Emma Watson, and the extraordinary Daniel Radcliffe? I mean, how important are the stars? I shall be looking at this. It'd
it's
be interesting.
An interesting aspect.
How that's progressing.
Particularly given that the next time you speak to Hannah Brown, she will have returned from the Harry Potter experience, won't you, Hannah?
Oh, yes. I'm very excited.
Mm. Oh, super. I'm also an admirer of the movies. I thought they were great.
Yeah, it was just wondrous.
Have you seen The Cursed Child? I haven't, but I wondered.
I haven't seen the show, but I've read the screenplay.
There we are, you see. So read the screenplay, don't see the show. Ben, last two questions for Richard Fitzwilliams, please.
Richard, have you enjoyed your 10 o'clock link with us on the show today?
Yes, enormously.
Fabulous.
And as he described, sorry, I was cutting across there, Ben, it was like some strange sort of system where people talk over each other and they just lose that discipline. Mm-hmm. Second question, please.
And will you be joining us again next week on the show?
Yes, I look forward to it.
Will it be Star Wars review next week? Or?
No.
Well, I think one of the things we'll be talking about is The Zookeeper's Wife with Jessica Chastain. What's not to love when you've got Jessica?
Do you understand my joke there? May the fourth next week, Richard.
It's all right. Don't worry. Please do not oversell it, Ben. The delivery doesn't work. I'll lend Richard a little piece here by saying, from the actress he described as an eyeful, Charlotte Le Bon, to another Le Bon. Thank you.